the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do. Florida wins.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
All right. D-squared. We've got Jeff Van Gundy joining us today. I mean, you talk about his experience. You talk about the Last Dance. You talk about, obviously, the great games and great Knick teams against the Bulls. You talk about his perspective on coaches and coaching. I'm fired up about it, my man Jeff Van Gundy joining us.
Yeah, it's a great get. You and Taylor after it again, getting the guy that I want to talk to him about the Last Dance. I'm curious his experience with Michael Jordan and competing against Jordan, because let's be honest, the number one sports thing going on right now is reaction to the Last Dance and anticipation to the Last Dance coming up on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, man, because he was right in the center of those teams.
He was in the center of them. But before we get to our pal Jeff Van Gundy, I've got to mention our friends at LinkedIn Jobs.
All right, when it's time to hire, I know that finding the right person for your company can be challenging. It's almost like being on the recruiting trail. This is especially true in a small business or any team where every employee truly impacts the organization, Seth.
So when you are ready to find the next hire, LinkedIn can help. LinkedIn Jobs matches your role with qualified candidates so you can find the right person quickly. That's something that both you and I are not very good at, doing anything quickly.
LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with 675 million members nationwide. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for so you can hire the right person faster.
For things like collaboration, creativity, adaptability, all important qualities in a great teammate like Dan Dockage, LinkedIn looks beyond just hard skills and put your job post in front of qualified candidates every day so it's seen by people looking for jobs like yours. That's why companies rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires.
Find the right person for your business with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit LinkedIn.com/courtside again. That's LinkedIn.com/courtside to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions do apply.
Hey, Dan, and one more thing. Just a reminder to tune into The Last Dance. I mean, The Last Dance, behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday at 9 p.m. on ESPN.
And listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. It's available wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
All right, we'd like to welcome in Jeff Van Gundy. Coach Van Gundy, give me a scoop. What have you been doing in the quarantine lifestyle?
Well, if in the Olympics next summer there's a slow walking marathon, I'm your guy, because that's all I do. I take slow, long walks to nowhere.
He sounds like he's on my routine, Dan. My dog's tired of me. I say, Jake, you want to go for a walk? He looks at me and goes in the other room now. That's how bad my life is.
Oh, it's true. Like, no one's ever, my body's breaking down because all I'm doing is walking, you know? So it's like ridiculous.
D-Squared, what are you doing besides drinking?
It's unbelievable. I got college kids here. Last night we had a beer pong tournament. Tonight I went to bed. I'm like, look, dudes, I'm going to bed. I'm doing nothing, doing a little radio, trying to. I'm in the Jeff Van Gundy walk slowly, and I'm breaking down your boy Chris Ballard's draft choices coming up, because this is a big draft for the Colts, and I know you and Chris Ballard, the GM, are very close, right?
Yeah, I love Chris. He's when I came here to Houston, he was friendly with a radio guy in town, does like work for the NFL Network on their draft, and like, just listening to him and about how he evaluates and what wins in the NFL. And yeah, it's just been fascinating. He's been really, really good to me over the years. And if I wasn't a season ticket holder to the Texans and my love for the Texans, I could go to every game in Indy. I'd love them so much, but, and I love Luck. So Luck being a Houston kid. So yeah, I hope Philip Rivers does well for him.
I got a question. You are like one of the world's great sportsmen. I mean, if you think about how many different sports teams, plus you got the gals that played on the women's soccer national team, Whitney and those girls, actually one of the gals interned at a law firm this summer with my youngest daughter, Jackie. Like, how many different sports teams are you a fan of, and how did you end up having a group of gals on that national team end up living with you?
So the national team girls, I had three from the U.S. team and one from the Australian team live with us at any given time. And it started out at a fundraiser like we all go to. And the managing director of the women's team in Houston just mentioning that they had a need for, a program where, community members took in the girls to save on housing costs. And I said, that's a hell of an idea. Count me in. And then I came home and I said to my wife, I said, we're going to have two girls living with us this summer. And she looked at me like, have you lost your mind? And it turned out to be one of the greatest things we ever did, because I learned a little bit more about soccer, but these girls, it was Megan Klingenberg, Whitney Ingen, and Morgan Bryan, right? They taught me so much about the elite athlete who has not been spoiled. Like, these girls, like, they were so grateful for anything that was done for them. And so anyway, it was a great, great experience. And I even went to a World Cup in Vancouver, and I saw that final, and that was something.
Hey, all right, walk me through this. Hey, I go to a fundraiser, and I come home and say, hey, I bought two women to live with us. That's a hell of a wife you got, man.
No, listen, if you've ever seen someone look at more cross-eyed than that initial conversation when I came home, it hasn't happened. And you think after all, you just think you would run something like that by your wife,
right,
instead of just declaring it to be true. But I'll say this now, the funny part is I love it, but those girls and those are lifetime friends for our family. And having two daughters, what role models for your daughters? And they're not even like, one's a sports fan, one couldn't tell you anything about sports, but just to watch their work ethic and to see their drive and their commitment, that was good. Really good.
Well, you said something interesting. You said it was interesting to see how unspoiled, talented athletes are. What do you mean by that?
Well, I would say, and I would always tell them this, like, the biggest diva in women's soccer would be the easiest NBA guy to ever deal with. It just, like, they just don't know how to act entitled as much, And so, I don't know if it's because of they've had to fight and scrap for every dollar they've earned, or because their professional league has, it's folded, I think, two or three times, and they know they've got to try to make this one work and last. And now in this pandemic, who knows if it will be able to. But I just think it's just a different mindset. And the level of conditioning in these elite soccer players would put conditioning our players, our best conditioned players, to shame. The level of conditioning is, and in the elements they have to do it, it's something to behold.
Hey, Jeff, let's move to the NBA. What if anything do you see happening here with this year? Do you see anything happening with this year?
I can't see it personally. I don't see the NHL, Major League Baseball, or the NBA being able to resume this year. And I think the football, college and pro, will be delayed. And I don't know how much or how long, but I just don't see this starting on time, because for the NBA and the others, my question is not, can we get started again? My question is, what happens when invariably somebody connected to one of the teams comes down with the virus? Then do you stop the whole league again? Because if that's your, if you're going to stop the league on one person coming down with it, then you may as well not even start it back up, because just it's going to happen, right? And so, and if they're lucky enough to get started back, the it's like a new season. It'll be like a new season. You'll carry your record and you'll carry your roster into this summer season, but you're going to have to start from scratch and not skip steps. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. I just don't want them to be, I know the money is so great. I just don't want them to cheapen a championship with some gimmicky way to sort of have a playoff.
That's interesting to say. Like, how long do you think? We were talking about this in baseball, Dan and I on his radio show. For a basketball team, depending on, like, the different players have different accessibilities to staying in condition, how long do you think you would need? Like, you got USA basketball teams that went overseas that put you through these guys together, and then you were competing. Now, obviously, that's not for an NBA championship. How long would you need to get a team ready to compete and play again, do you think?
I think if they were in condition, like even pre-training camp condition, you know, like how they come into training camp, you could get ready to play in 2 weeks. There's no question. The thing that worries me is, as you said, so many different levels of conditioning will happen because, you know, you have the very few like LeBron James who has his own court in his house, right? So he can do his own thing and have his weight room and all that. And then you've got other guys pinned up in in apartments with no access. So I would suspect you would need 2 weeks of conditioning to get in enough shape to start a training camp, and then two more weeks to try to, you know, I mean, it's going to be awful basketball. I say 4 weeks at a minimum. And I just don't know if we're going to have 4 weeks to get going. I don't see how that time frame of what you need is going to mesh with what we're going to be able to do.
Let's go to The Last Dance. What did you think when you were watching it?
I didn't. You know, people said it was great, and I'm glad it was, but I always said, like, people said, why didn't you watch it? I said, because I lived it. I didn't have to watch it. I got my ass whipped by those guys. I have so much respect for the talent of their players and their coaches, how that was put together. The one thing I heard that happened that I think I wish it hadn't happened this way is, I guess there was a lot of footage or some footage of people mocking Jerry Krause, and I'm not sure that's in the greatest taste, you know, when a guy has passed away. And also, I would say one of the things I think that all of them are missing is how much Jerry Krause had to do with their success. I mean, he drafted exceptionally well. And I know Kukoc got a lot of heat for being Krause's boy, but that guy was an integral part to their championship teams when he was there. And he drafted Pippen and Grant. And now Jordan, that was Rod Thorne. And that was the biggest part. But Jerry Krause hired Phil Jackson, you know, and drafted Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant and got Dennis Rodman. So I'm really confused why they're not praising Jerry Krause more. And I think, you know, I just don't like it when a guy can't defend himself.
Hey, that's interesting you say that. In professional sport, even in college sport now today, do you think that – can you imagine a scenario, though – today where you have a team that's a championship team, well, I guess it's happening. It's happening with the New England Patriots. And, you know, you're losing major pieces and people trying to point fingers. But back then, how much different was it because there was no social media compared to, you think, how it would be now with the Bulls and with how it all ended up? I mean, do you have a take on that or an opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, people who you just have no privacy now. And I think the difference between a player choosing to leave, like Brady did, is far different than an organization setting out to break up a team that has won three straight championships. I mean, it still boggles my mind that they intentionally and willfully and was supported by ownership to say, yeah, we're better off without Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen and the rest. And let's go out and draft a couple high school dudes and see if they can play. It smacks of a little bit of arrogance in that you think you're always going to win because of you versus the only reason you win for a prolonged period of time in professional sports is because of great players. And every championship coach or Hall of Fame coach, his name is attached to Hall of Fame players. And the moment you lapse and you forget that this is about players, I mean, that would be like in his prime, like the Lakers saying, we don't want to keep winning. Let's move on from, you know, Magic Johnson or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or the Celtics from, you know, Bird. And, you know, after winning three championships in a row, it just boggles the mind, actually.
See, I'm so with you on Jerry Krause being a Bulls fan and growing up there. Like, but if they wanted to criticize Krause for what you just said, which is getting rid of those guys and drafting Curry and drafting Chandler, then fine. But to criticize him for his run with the Bulls was ridiculous to me. Let me ask you this: when you go through and you think back about, you mentioned the Bulls, you got your ass kicked by them. What was something that the Bulls did, maybe as a team, as a unit, that maybe folks don't understand that made them so great? Is there anything?
Well, I think when you think of that era of Bulls basketball, most fans, their first thought and second thought would have been about Jordan's greatness, and rightfully so. And then the third thought was about the triangle offense. And I thought they were much better defensively than they were offensively. I think offensively, the things about the triangle that were difficult was Jordan could get to many different spots on the floor with varying alignments, so that when you did double, it wasn't always from the same guy, and your rotations were the same. And because of his greatness and because of the placement of their players in the triangle, they were a terrific offensive rebounding team. It gave like a guy like Rodman, Horace Grant, Pippen sometimes opportunities to create second shots. So I thought, you know, offensively, they were good. I thought defensively, though, they were great. I thought when they were engaged, which it was most of the time, their length, speed, defensive intelligence, and overall size was really hard to deal with. And you needed guys who could go off the dribble and get their own shot. So we finally got Allen Houston in 96-97, and that was my best team because we had a guy who could go off the dribble. Because the way they disrupted and played passing lanes, it was hard to move the ball from one side of the floor to the other.
You think right now, like you compare, and it's different eras in a lot of ways, but you look at that team and then people say, well, you know, well, how would they compare it to the Golden State Warriors, or how would they match up with the Golden State Warriors when the Golden State Warriors were whole? The rules were totally different. The game was more physical. How do you look at, like, how do you compare, like, two great organizations and teams of different eras?
Yeah. I read this thing about 3 years ago that really helped me with all these comparison questions, and it said, comparison is the thief of joy, because somebody is always going to feel diminished. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the Bulls, either three-peat Bulls, like I don't care if you take the early one or the late one, they take a backseat to no one as far as overall versatility, star power. Now, that doesn't mean they were better than the 86 Celtics or the Showtime Lakers or the Sixers with Moses and Cheeks and Tony and Dr. J or the Warriors, right? But I would say this. The one thing I do know is Michael Jordan was a hyper-efficient scorer in an era where there was slower paced and so much more contact that was allowed. It was like all the advantages were to the defense, where today all the advantages were to the offense. Not a lot of three-point shooting that surrounded him, so the floor was very much constricted, and the dude still shot over 50%. And got to the line all the time. I know if you dropped in prime Michael Jordan into today's rules and game, there is no doubt in my mind he would average north of 40, and it wouldn't be hard for him.
So So how you're coaching, you see these guys, you know, you've got Patrick, you've got a hell of a team. How frustrating was it to never get beyond them?
Well, you know, the interesting part is you can acknowledge while you're in these seasons with them that they're a great team. But that never, like, lessened our belief in ourselves or our right. belief that we could beat them, right? So, right? So we played them, I think, like 4 or 5 straight years. And then, you know, and then again, my first year as a head coach. And so we could beat them in regular season some, and we could play them tight, you know, to 7th games against them. What we never had the answer for was, like, getting over the top and being able to score enough. Like, ultimately, we were in the slugfest where we could hold them down, but we could just never score enough. And the one I'll always regret and rue to my grave is in 93, which was our best team, we had home court advantage against them. We go up 2-0. Remember Starks' dunk over that great left-handed dunk? And we were torching them on the Starks-Ewing pick and roll. And it really, that game and that play was caused by them in game trying to force the pick and roll down. It was the first time I'd ever seen it. Now, they didn't do it well, but they were the first NBA team that I saw that tried it and did it the rest of that playoff series to try to keep us along the baseline. But we were up 2-0. That was the year Jordan went to Atlantic City in between games 1 and 2. There was controversy about that. We go back to Chicago for game 3. And you may get one okay game from Jordan in a series. He gave us an historically bad performance. He shot 3 for 18 from the floor. You have to win that game. Instead, we were not ready, and we got hammered by 20. Because we weren't ready for their intensity, and that's the one I'll regret. Next game, game 4, he gets like 54. We play well, but he gets 54. Game 5, B.J. Armstrong with the corner 3. Charles Smith got fouled a couple times, no call, and then we lose games on the road, and that's how quick it can go. But it's that game 3 not being ready, subconsciously softening up a little bit, that I'll always regret, because that team was good enough to win it all.
That's wild. How about your play-by-play? You know, I talked to Buzz Peterson the other day about Jordan. He said right now with the rules today, I said, like, if Jordan played in the NBA right now at 57, could he get 10? And Buzz Peterson said, the way the rules are now, he messes around with the guys every once in a while with the Hornets. He said, I would be disappointed if he didn't get 20. You think that's actually feasible?
Now, that's a guy looking for a raise right there. Come on.
Right. I'm with you, Jeff.
You know what's funny, though? You mentioned in that, Seth, you know what? The other part that that someone told me about the Last Dance that I thought was interesting was, I guess they had a segment in there about Jordan being, like, really, like, not understanding why they wanted to rebuild, right? And isn't it funny? Like, when he's gone into ownership, he's been in constant rebuild mode. And he now, like Jerry Reinsdorf has been accused of, doesn't want to pay a lot. And it's just funny how circumstances change your viewpoint. I just find that interesting.
Yeah, I find it ironic. I also find it ironic that you can make the argument that Jerry Krause did a hell of a lot better as a general manager / team builder than Jordan has ever done, which I kind of like, because I'm with you again on Krause, and I'm also with you on Krause not being able to defend himself. I find that interesting and funny, actually. I do.
Yeah, and, you know, I think for me, I get, like, there's always going to be some conflict between coach and players and management players, particularly over contractual situations. But I also found it interesting that I read an article today of players excusing Scottie Pippen for purposefully missing the start of a season, as if that's a justified approach to a bad contract. First of all, no one forced him to sign a contract. I mean, he signed it willingly. I don't understand why he was upset with the organization. I can see being upset with myself for signing it. But so anyway, I find things like I wish it could have happened more gracefully, that they all appreciated the greatness of each other, because Jordan was the best I've ever seen live. Like, there's no question in my mind. Just no answers for him. Pippen was the best off-ball wing defender I've ever seen, and tremendous passing ability and intelligence. I thought Phil Jackson was a tremendous coach. Same with Krause as a general manager. So I wish they could have just appreciated each other's importance to what they accomplished. It wasn't one or the other. It was all of them together.
Do you have Phil Jackson, you, at a fundraiser? You cordial with Phil Jackson? You friends with Phil Jackson? What are you with Phil Jackson?
No, I wouldn't say friends. I mean, I have, you know, like if I fell over at that fundraiser, I think Phil would step over me on his way to the buffet, you know.
What if he fell over?
Yeah, the buffet would be calling. No, but I just, you know, but you, that doesn't mean, like, you don't have to, like, want to have like a meal together to appreciate how good somebody is at their job. Like, that's the thing to me. And really, as I get older, I really don't have any time for, like, you know, back in the day we used to like try to needle each other. Now it's just like, I just have great appreciation for what he was able to accomplish. It's hard to win. And, you know, people would say he had the best talent. And I would say, well, he did, both in Chicago and L.A. with Kobe and Shaq and Jordan and Pippen. But he came through. He came through. And he knew how to pace his team correctly, both mentally and physically. And he had a connection. I mean, think about it. Michael Jordan left basketball because Phil Jackson wasn't brought back. Now, that it's hard to have a connection like that with a star player. And so you have to give him credit. And besides, you know, him not liking me a whole lot, which is cool, like, that doesn't mean I can't respect, like, what a phenomenal job he did with the Bulls and the league.
How about your boy Riley? Now, like, Riley and Jackson, I mean, you coached with Riley, right?
Yeah. I
you
think
coached against Jackson. How does that dynamic?
Yeah, I think they butted heads, but I think they're, you know, more contemporaries in that same era and played in the NBA. And I think, you know, I think both were role players in the NBA, so I think they appreciate each other's path. So I think they're fine. I'm not sure about that. I don't know for sure, but I think. Yeah. That was just there when they used to go at each other. It was more just born out of competition. And that's when you used to be able to lobby for calls in the playoffs, which was a sport unto itself. Now they fine you for that, so no one does it anymore. And so the days in between are, you know, instead of having good stories, we have, you know, where a team drank wine the night before the game. Like, who cares?
Right. Can you have a star and a general manager go at each other with mostly the star openly mocking, which is exactly what it showed Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen doing to Jerry Krause. Can you do that in the modern age of basketball? Because when my only exposure to the NBA is one game with you and doing some summer leagues games last summer, and all I heard from everybody, coaches and general managers, is how much players have to feel like you love them and respect them and care for them and all this kind of stuff. Can you have a relationship like what Jordan and Krause had and be successful today?
Well, no, I don't think it could be like that, because I think the media pressure would be so intense. I also think, too, that if a player tried to do that, we look upon that type of behavior differently. That, you know, the term bullying or shaming or whatever the term is, right? If you look back through the lens of the 90s, you know, it was, you know, certainly different, but it wasn't termed offensive. Now I think with the social media, people would be creating such division with how they saw it, right? Like, I think it wouldn't be tolerated the same way. And as far as the love, I think you have to establish appropriate, and Greg Popovich always uses the term appropriate, and I think it's so apt. You have to have appropriate relationships with everybody. Coddling does not work. Lowering expectations does not work. If the thinking is you want to be the most well-liked, that's the goal, well, then you can have those type of behaviors. But good relationships are all based on trust, respect, common goal. And if you have a common goal and you have good trust and good respect and you work hard, you know, I think those behaviors should be rewarded and should be talked about and praised. But praising things that shouldn't be praised or coddling, I just don't think it works, at least to try to help you win. It may keep you employed. It may keep you in good graces. But I think every player needs a little push to ultimately get to places where they can't get to by themselves.
Well, having said that, so the NBA is going to start this NBA Academy, which is basically going to teach 18-year-old guys how to be pros as opposed to going to college. Do you have any, do you have any feeling about that? And if you know, I understand the NBA is a business, and the business of the NBA, obviously they see guys going overseas and rather than going to college, a very small percentage of them. But now they're actually recruiting guys that have signed to play at other schools to come and play at the academy. What's your take on that whole thing? Do you think that's a good idea, bad idea? Wait and see?
Yeah, I'm in a wait and see how it's implemented mode. First of all, I don't blame the players at all. I think if they're paying somebody $500,000 and I guess they can probably get a shoe deal or whatever they're doing, I understand fiscally why players would do that. I think two things. Who do they hire as a staff for that, and who's, you know, how are they going to try to drive them to both better play and better professionalism, right? And then can they play enough significant games? There's no development that occurs without enough games that matter. And so, you know, thinking, if you think, you know, you're going to go 1-on-0 against somebody, you know, the air, and you're going to, you know, do drills, and that's going to get you better. It can probably help you a little bit, but you have to play enough competitive games with meaning. And to me, that's the unknown. How are they going to schedule games that have meaning? And who is going to be the ones trying to drive this group to improvement, knowing that they're not in a league, they're not playing for an NCAA championship, they're not even playing for a G League championship or an Australian championship. So I'm interested. I understand why they're doing it. Whether it works, I think it'll be, you know, about who they hire and how they try to push them, who they play against, and how many competitive games they can align themselves with. But one thing I'm sure of, it's not going to hurt interest in college basketball at all. The NCAA tournament in and of itself would survive no matter who plays. It's the schools more than the individual players.
Hey, Jeff, in the documentary, Danny Ainge played golf between games. He was with the Celtics, and Jordan is with the Bulls, and Jordan drops like 49 on him. They play golf the next day, and then Jordan drops 63. Is that commonplace for guys that are going to play against each other and, in fact, guard one another, playing golf in between? Was Jordan just that unique, or are things like that common?
Well, I think I had to try to get over Ewing and Mourning going out to eat the night before, you know, like a game seven. You know, their friendship superseded, you know, the competition. And with both of those guys, or with Patrick, I can honestly say I never felt it hurt his competitive desires or his intensity. But I think all players would try to say that, oh, no, you know, none of that matters. I play as hard against that person as I do anybody else. And I don't think they have a great gauge of when their intensity is right and when they're being played. And so I have no idea that Ainge played golf with him, but I just think, you know, in today's era where everybody is friendly and there aren't really rivalries based on animosity, as an individual player, and I don't think the teams or the coaches can do anything about that. You just have to monitor whether your competitive instincts are being dulled a little bit because of your friendships, or if you, no matter your friendships, you still have that edge that you need to win and win big.
Hey, Jeff, what's the hardest thing? Say you went back into coaching. What's the hardest thing to about? Say you have a good team, so we're saying the team is fairly competitive. What's the hardest thing about coaching in the NBA?
I think you have to try to get a group of prideful athletes who individually have had multiple successes along the way to willingly embrace sacrifice on an everyday basis. That is, to me, the greatest thing you have to deal with. You can't run from. Your team has to address it constantly. And then I think the second part of that is a commitment to do the unglamorous things. You know, defending, being a great screener, all those unglamorous acts that go directly to winning and losing. Because so much of the game, particularly now, you know, you read like write-ups of games and they don't even mention like anything but numbers, like, you know, like this guy was a plus 14, showed an, you know, shot, you know, six open shots due to second spectrum, or, you know, like all this. You don't even know what's happened in the game. So I think all the numbers start to suck the joy out of the game, and you have to make sure that you can tell your team, hey, look, watch player X screen. This is just like a pass. This is a totally unselfish act. And you have to praise the unglamorous.
Wow, that's interesting. All right, last question. I know we've taken a bunch of time. NBA draft, obviously pandemic. You're not going to have interviews. You're going to have to do them on FaceTime or whatever. You're not going to have individual workouts or agent workouts or all that other junk. Why are people making that out to be such a big thing? These guys have watched players all year long. All year long. 8,000 games they can watch on Synergy. You can interview guys whenever you want. Why are people like losing their minds that, well, we're not going to be able to watch a scripted agent workout with a guy making jumpers against chairs? It drives me crazy when I'm reading this stuff. Oh, well, you know, it's really going to be hard. We're going to have to move the draft back because, you know, guys aren't going to get a chance to really evaluate. I mean, am I way off on that? Or
no, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, if I was the NBA, I'd keep the draft the same. The order, you know, it's an unusual year. Adam Silver can determine the order, but I would keep it the same, and I agree. Like, if you watch the game and you can talk to players on the phone, I mean, these players are so well prepared now by their agents and publicists. It's not like they're going to reveal their deepest, darkest secrets. I mean, they're going to tell you what you know, hope to hear, that all they care about is winning and, you know, God, country, and whatever team they go to. So I think a player's character, basketball character, is revealed on film every night. And you have a chance to watch. And I think they'll do fine in drafting. And I think in some ways they may do a better job evaluating, because they're probably going to sit down and actually watch more games, more possessions, versus try to get, you know, guys in for workouts, which, as you said, usually consist of comfort jump shots. So, yeah, I think they'll be fine, and I'd keep the draft at the same date.
Well, good stuff.
I would too.
I appreciate you doing this, man. I really do. I know.
Absolutely.
We're all kind of trying to find things to talk a little ball. And like, it's joking. You talk about the walks. Literally, I gauge my day on how much time I can waste walking so I can get to the next, you know, next part of the day.
I'm in double sessions right now. A morning stroll, and now, you know, like late at night, weather permitting, you know, stroll once more. But never break a sweat. Never.
Wait a second. You got to break a sweat. Come on. You used to be a runner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is like a stroll. Like, you know, this is probably a 19-minute mile, I would say. That would be my guess.
Do you see the same people every day and, like, give the little head nod?
Yeah, and everybody, you can tell. Maybe I'm a little sensitive, but you can just tell, like, you know, these people who are walking with their families and, or whatever are saying, you know, that poor guy, he's a loser. He's always out here by himself, you know. So, hey, that's how it is.
Welcome to my entire life right there.
There you go.
All right. I think they're actually saying these days to stand the other side of the street.
Right. No question. Nah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Hey, man, stay safe, man. We appreciate you doing this.
You got it, guys. Take care.
My man Van Gundy, D Squared, never disappoints. What do you think?
Hey, I'm not lying. If you hear a better interview about coaching, about basketball, about the Last Dance, you let me know, because Seth Greenberg, you getting him on the show, you and Taylor getting him on the show was fantastic, because the dude just, he was in the middle of it, and he's honest about things. Like, he doesn't sugarcoat. He doesn't politically correct it. He's just honest about it, which is very, very cool.
You know, our discussion with Van Gundy about The Last Dance is brought to you by State Farm. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Coverage is also brought to you by AT&T.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.